shoots, scores! DK wins it for an end round! The biggest man in MLS comes up huge!
What is going on, guys? Welcome back to the Lions Block Podcast. This is your host, Gavin, and we are talking about the Open Cup final. I don't even want to think about what happened against Philadelphia on Saturday. It doesn't exist. So we're here to talk about the Open Cup final, because who could not want more Open Cup champions content? That's right, we did win the game 3-0, and just so excited to finally get a chance to sit down and talk about it with you guys. Really, it was a hectic end of the week and weekend for me and many of the guys. Tried to get Adam, Daniel, and Chase together. It just wasn't going to work. Tried to get Taylor on, and it wasn't going to work. So unfortunately, just one contributor here tonight with me, but it is obviously the best contributor. So you guys will be happy to hear that. Ooh. It is me and Chase tonight. Chase, how you doing, tonight, friend?
Good. Yeah, we're going to have to settle with the there's no foreign flair from Daniel or Taylor, but we're going to try our best.
Yeah, that's all right. I always go back to that review we got, and they're like, Chase is my favorite. And I'm like,
I do remember it. That was a bright moment. I sent it to my mother. She loved it.
I'll allow it. Honestly, when I listen back to the podcast, I'm like, damn, Chase, that's a good take right there. Very well spoken. Wow. So,
too kind.
Now I've hyped you up a lot, so now you really have to have a good podcast episode this time around.
Oh, boy. There's only down from you.
Yeah, literally all the way at the top. So including all the way at the top is, of course, Orlando City. And we are top for once in the Open Cup. First major trophy since joining MLS. First and foremost, got a level set. How are you feeling about the win?
I mean, even days after, it's still like, I don't know, it's fantastic. Like, this is the reason why, like, cup finals, let alone, you know, actually winning a trophy, I feel like it's one of the biggest reasons that you follow a team, because you want to see them succeed. And of course, there's like community elements and stuff like that as well. That is fantastic. But it was something that felt like, you know, I would think about like the years that we would go to all of these games and kind of struggle through watching like dire performances and not really seeing any sort of improvement or any, like, I don't know, signs that things were going to get better, for lack of a better terms. Like, it just made all of that like worth it, in a sense. Like, it was the best experience I've had at any sporting event, I probably would say, in my life. Like, it was like, I, like many people, was like brought to tears for it. It was fantastic, and that feeling hasn't like really left to an extent in the days after. I'm very happy, very proud. I'm happy for, you know, the players as well, but even more so for like the fans, because I definitely think that there are a lot of people who, like myself, have struggled through it, and it's what it's all about to see your team succeed. And there's nothing that can bring me down. You know, there are some controversy surrounding it and some people talking about how it's against a lower league opposition, but I think our cup run was really good. We played a lot of solid performances and professional performances even, and beat a lot of good teams, but it's phenomenal. And I'm so happy, so proud. It's made all the bad times worth it.
Yeah, seriously. Okay, so you said the lower league thing, and I did want to, I literally wrote down a sentence basically that I wanted to say. And that was going to be later in the pod, but I'm just going to say it now. I think it is absolute bullshit for anyone to come out and say that there's an asterisk on this because of lower league, let alone Spygate. I don't even care about that because that's a nonsense. But lower league, we beat Tampa Bay Rowdies, who is a rival. So yes, they're in the lower league, but they're a rival. And literally probably Tampa's biggest game of the season was for them to come to Exploria Stadium and try and beat us. So they were up for it, and we had our second string, and we still came out winners. That's a big win, you know, when you think about it. And that's not an easy, easy game. Any rivalry is tough. You see it in England sometimes, where lower league teams will go against a Premier League team, and they're rivals, and they'll still be a close game. It won't be a blowout. So that's BS. Then we play against who is next on the run? Philadelphia. Shocker. That's a really good team. First in the East, just blew us out 5-1. We don't want to talk about that. Looking like the favorites to be Supporter Shield now that LAFC have had a couple stumbling blocks, and they are smashing teams left, right, and center. Then we played Miami, another rival MLS team. Almost came in and beat us if not for Facundo Torres being awesome, and then a penalty shootout win. I think it was Mason in goal that day. And then Nashville, you know, they're always hard to beat. So another MLS team constantly making the playoffs, usually home playoffs as well. They currently sit in fourth. They're going to be a playoff team for sure in the West. It's just a matter of if they're home or not. Nashville have always had our number. That's a very tough game. Damn near lost that one as well, if not for Godrigo in that last second goal. Man, that's going to go down in history, looking back at it. And then New York Red Bulls, another team who have had our number, and we were at a low point, and they were at a high, and somehow, some way, we turned it around at home and just smashed them 5-1. A little bit of change in system helped with that. And then the final. And I think, what's his name? Evan. I think Evan said on the broadcast that Sacramento was probably our easiest opponent. And when you look at it, he's probably right. Like, out of all the teams we've played, Sacramento was probably our easiest opponent. So I think it's bullshit to say that, oh, there's an asterisk on this from the lower league, because we probably had the hardest run up to the final when you look at the two rivals and the three MLS teams that we did end up playing. Or the four MLS teams, but one of them was a rival. So what are your thoughts on the lower league asterisk commentary?
Yeah, I mean, I think as with any sort of cup competition, like, you can always kind of pick apart and say, you know, oh, we were fortunate to come up against a second division team in the final. And you can also point out, like, oh, we, you know, we were lucky to be home for a majority, if not all the games. But that's just how, like, cup competitions are. Like, you just have to play what's in front of you. And it's a battle of, like, depth to, you know, a war of attrition at times where you just kind of have to grind it out. And I don't really think anything, like you said, holds water to try to, like, you know, put an asterisk next to this tournament, which I don't think anyone is probably seriously making that case. It's all in sort of, I don't know if banter would be the right word.
Yep.
just trying to, you know, take your rivals down as I let my dog out of the room. But it's not something that is an actual thing. And Sacramento were a team who did well to be here. Like, it's just because they're in the second division, like, they beat a lot of MLS teams along the way. And they were as worthy of an opponent as any team would have been, because they won the games that they needed to, if anything, even more so because they came in a little bit earlier in the competition. So You can point out that we had a lot of good performances against MLS teams, and but just even more importantly, I don't think in a cup competition, it's not like all the MLS teams were, for whatever reason, not suspended. It wasn't like they were all taking it any less seriously than we were. It's we did well, and we followed the route that was laid out in front of us, and we faced every challenge, you know, with the struggles that come with the cup competition and balancing competing on two fronts, which we've done, all things considered, pretty all right with. So if you know, which maybe there isn't, but if there's anyone trying to make the argument that this is not as impressive, that we made it all the way, and also like in America and in any cup competition in the world, it's like, it's well documented that second division teams can do well. Like the Rochester Rhinos, I believe, won the Open Cup like in the late 90s. And it's happened in recent history where a team from you know, the lower division, and I get maybe the gap between MLS and, you know, NASL, USL Championship, whatever the lower division is at the time, like from now to where we were like 20 years ago, even, it might be a bit bigger, but it's still just, it's just how it is. It's whoever makes it to the final, who's ever able to win all their games and survive in advance, they're the worthy winners, I would say, of any cup competition. Yeah. So there really is not much of a case, I would say, for anyone cups to seriously make the claim.
Cups are just a different thing, man. I mean, look at SKC. They have been awful this year. They're in the West. They're 12th in the West out of 14. They've not looked good. Every time I've watched them, they've been very unimpressive. Now, they've been hampered by injuries, but they made it to the semifinals, you know, and they could have been our opponent in the final, and it would have been Orlando versus SKC. Now, they didn't get the job done on penalties. It could have gone either way. And but SKC dominated that game. I actually watched that semifinal, and it was SKC, all SKC for the most part. Sacramento had few looks at goal, a couple, but very similar to the final. SKC just didn't score, and then it went to penalties, and that's just anything goes anyway. But let's jump off of that, because whatever, who cares? No, I did want to say as well, just thank you to the community at large, Orlando City Twitter, Orlando City fans in general. I had a really, really good day. It was very similar to when I went to the Nashville game. I had a great experience at the playoff game in Nashville. Obviously, we lost, but flying up with the fans, hanging out with the fans before the game, during the game, after the game, meeting new people, a lot of similarities there. Obviously, no flying involved this time, but I just had a really good day. I got to meet Taylor, Orlando City, UK, obviously. Had a couple drinks with him before the game. Got to meet some OC UK guys as well. Then I went and hung out with some other people I knew at the stadium. Met some people who I was sitting next to at the game. Just awesome. The celebrations. I went into the wall, went over and did some Orlando City TV content, OCTV, I guess is what they're called. I loved it. OC Fan TV, sorry. So thank you to all you guys as well for making the day just memorable, special, and amazing. Chase, I want to hear your thoughts now on the atmosphere. So I know we've been going a while and we still haven't talked about the game itself, but for me, I'm going to come out and say that was the best atmosphere Exploria Stadium's ever seen.
Yeah, I certainly agree. And it makes sense. I mean, we've never really had a game there. Well, I would say maybe like the NYCFC game, our first playoff game, but obviously that was like restricted a bit due to COVID as well.
Yep.
We've never really had a game where we were playing with such high stakes and we were all able to be there at full capacity. So even if we were like to look back at like the first game in Exploria against NYCFC as well, it almost just doesn't compare, because like the spectacle of a cup final, and also like I think that there should be some credit given to just the way that everything was presented. I know that they got Mike Rome, the WWE commentator, to do like a pregame hype up, and they had a good soundtrack going, and mm-hmm. just every little thing, like the lights that they were doing, like it really, like if you present something, you know, this is even like I mentioned, like how that guy is a professional wrestling commentator, and this is a bit of almost like a professional wrestling philosophy, but like if you present something as a big thing, people are going to believe that it's a big thing. And I think that as much as it was objectively like such a huge moment, it is a historic cup competition that we were in the final in the first time that we were in a cup final in our MLS history, or actually not the MLS's back tournament as well, but the first time that we were all able to be there for a cup final, it was huge. And it was all made all the more so special by like the community aspect of it. And, you know, maybe there have been some people say that we've struggled a little bit in the league with attendance, which obviously everyone has their own reason for not being able to make it in the games. And that's no one's fault. If anything, the onus should be on the club to make it accessible and, you know, enjoyable and something that people want to come to. But none of that really mattered that day. It was all about the cup competition. It was a lot of people who, to varying extents, have seen a lot of negative performances and, you know, come out of this club. And like I said earlier, like this is kind of the thing that it's all almost been leading up to. And everyone was there. Everyone was ready. They knew that like Sacramento has never played in front of a crowd like that, I would like to say, even though like, you know, we talked about like the game against SKC, they obviously had wonderful home support. And I actually met a few, like just in passing, some Sacramento fans as well. And they were all like incredibly like great people. And I have a lot of respect for that club and how mm-hmm. much they have fought and how, I don't know, I don't like to use the term classy because it feels kind of weird sometimes, but they were carrying themselves with a great air of professionalism and respect, not like respect for the MLS team because they were as deserving to be there, but they were
just respectful in general. I mean, the
cup competition, respect for, you know, they were there and they were ready to go. And that I think made it even more special. Like it wasn't something that they rolled over and took, and it required all the fans to be in there for, you know, the entirety of the game. And yeah, I commend our fans because there was 70 minutes, like we're going to talk about later, where I think that we were the better side, but maybe we looked like we should have been asserting ourselves more and creating more clear cut chances. And we never let up, I would like to think. And that's a huge factor. And like one of my friends, he was saying, like, I didn't want to talk about like the final as if it was a guaranteed win. But one of my friends was saying that he had like no doubt that we were going to lose because it was going to be such a raucous occasion. And that's not something Sacramento is used to. And quite frankly, maybe it's not something Orlando City players are used to, mm-hmm. Playing in front of a home crowd of such, you know, such a stature. Like, I don't know the last time we had like a visual sellout, you know what I'm saying? And it was phenomenal. It was exceptional. It was one of the best sports atmospheres I've been a part of. And I go to UCF football, you know, we like to think we're pretty good as well, but yeah,
they are.
It was great.
No, man. One of the things I said before the game, and I've been saying it a lot, is I couldn't wait to see Exploria full again. And I didn't even think about the atmosphere as well. Like, yeah, I wanted to see Exploria full. I wanted to see all the seats full. I wanted to see people excited for the game. But then for some reason, I just thought, okay, it's going to be the normal. The wall sings. People are going to be sitting there clapping, booing the ref whenever there's a bad call, and cheering the goals, like all the normal stuff. But the fans were up for it. The whole stadium was singing at one point, or multiple points, not just one point. The whole stadium was chanting. The whole stadium was in every moment, every kick. It felt like there were reactions. You know, we get into a decent spot, Faku gets on the ball, and people are standing up, and you hear the gasp from the crowd. And it's like, we weren't even creating any good opportunities consistently. We had a couple here and there, but we never even turned them into shooting chances. But the crowd were fantastic. The atmosphere was amazing. And yeah, that's a very good point. Sacramento, I've never really played in that. And at least for Orlando City, none of our players have played in that either. I'm sure Facundo Torres at Peñarol, when he was in the final, he's dealt with that kind of atmosphere before. I'm sure, I don't remember if Pereira was in a final for Krasnodar. Antonio Carlos and Gulo come from Palmeiras. They have good support. But like, so our players individually, some of them have been in that kind of environment, but not for Orlando City. And I'm really glad that you brought up the presentation as well, because I thought the club did a fantastic job pregame, making it feel like an event, not just, you know, another game. The soundtrack was amazing, I thought. The light show, like you said, everything you said, I agree with. I remember last year for the Atlanta game that we came back and won 3-2 when Vanderwater came off the bench, put that ball in for Nani to make it 3-2 that game. Adam and I sat together in the West Club, and I remember looking at him being like, this feels like a big deal. Like, something just feels different. Like, it felt like there were a couple extra fireworks. It felt like they were doing the, like, the pregame light show that they don't always do. And I was like, they're making this feel like a big deal. Like, this feels like a big game. And then, of course, I think it was Yosef Martinez scored in the first minute. And it was like, oh, shit. But that's what I want to see more of. That's what I want to see more of. That kind of pregame, like, oh, this is a big game. This is a big game. Playing Houston Dynamo at home in match week 17 is a big game for some reason. I think that can help get the fans in. But let's get into the game itself. Because we've been talking a while now, haven't even had a chance to do that. So starting lineup, let's start there. Were you surprised to see Ivan Angulo handed the start? This was a topic, not of contention, but of worry for us in the pregame episode, as we wanted Angulo to start, but we didn't think it was going to happen.
I think that there's an element of surprise because Oscar Perez stuck by Benji Michel, you know, to play on the wing a lot, even though I think, especially now with this performance, it's very clear, like, that is not his best position. Like, he's, like, much better played centrally.
He's been poor this season on the wing.
Yeah, and it's not his fault. Like,
no.
Yeah, which it's just a bit of mismanagement, I would say, not to be too harsh on anybody. But I think Angulo has looked good in his cameo appearances. And whenever he's on the ball, he's the type of player who maybe would complement Cara a bit well, even though Cara never really got into the game too much. But he's the type of player that would complement Cara a little bit well because he's able to take players on and maybe has a bit of a better delivery than Benji. And, you know, obviously with Pato being injured, unfortunately, I think it made a lot of sense for him to come in because I think Jake Mulroney, while he hasn't looked terrible, has not been like a world beater, I would say, and especially in comparison to Angulo when he's come in, which Angulo as well, like Angulo had a really good game. I think that one of his biggest attributes, honestly, is pressing the ball as well and able to win back possession in good areas. And he's also like a very technically good player. But, and you know, the same also, like Nico Giacchini really hasn't kind of panned out in the way that you would, and left wing really isn't his spot. I was pleasantly surprised, I would say, to see Angulo because I still thought maybe part of me was expecting to see the same like Facundo, Benji, and then Cara frontline. And I think it was a good call to not just start Angulo on the wing over Benji, but also have Benji as an option off the bench because he's been really, really good in this cup competition, especially when he's been played through the middle. I think that's where he's kind of looked his best, and it was good to have him come off the bench. And ultimately, it almost kind of felt like the big difference in the game because he had such an important hand in all three goals.
Yeah, Benji was very, very good. I mean, even it's funny you said Angulo. You like how the way he presses because he's obviously the one who wins the ball back for us for the game-winning goal. But yeah, 100%, I was worried about Angulo coming in, or sorry, not coming in, Benji starting, because everyone knows that all of our listeners know I have not been a fan of Benji on the wing this season. I don't think he gives us anything positive on the wing. I think he's just out there as a body, works hard defensively. He tries his best in the attack, but very rarely can we find consistent positives from him. The only thing I can recall is on that Columbus goal, he made a good run up the line. He got found. It stretched the defense. He brought it inside, and then the 1-2-1-2 happened, and we got that amazing team goal, and he played an important part in that. But not much else has come to fruition from Benji on the wing. So that's where I was worried. I was like, great, we're going to start the game with Benji on the wing. He's not going to do anything for 60 minutes, and we're going to take him off for Angulo. Angulo should start anyway. Angulo does start, and You know, Benji obviously does the first press that causes the guy to pass the ball back and they have to turn around. And Gulo, though, is alive to it, locks onto the ball, gets there quickly. 70 minutes into the game, he could have just been lazy, but no, he really had a big part to play. That touch to Benji is really good, too. Benji turns and gives it to Faku, and Faku just smashed it home. So I'm getting ahead of myself. I did want to also ask about your thoughts on Faku starting the game on the right. We've seen him excel recently, kind of in a more central position, and it was quite a surprise to me to see Faku on the right and Urso picking up those more central spots. I thought it was going to be flipped. What were your thoughts on seeing that?
Yeah, I mean, I think Urso, obviously, he actually has found success when he's been deployed in a more wide area. But I think Facundo, where we've been seeing him look more dangerous now, is he's been given maybe a little more freedom on the ball. And when he's able to kind of cut in, if he's able to, like, if he's given more freedom to dribble and try to go at players and create space for himself, I think that he can be very effective on the wing. And obviously he's very good centrally as well. He's a good creator as well. He has a good way to pass. He can almost play sort of as like an out and out 10. But I think that maybe if we're looking to get him not more involved, but more involved in the final third, I guess, playing him on the wing makes a bit of sense because he's going to get a lot more touches in the final third where he can try to create the final ball or find space for himself to shoot. And I think that maybe like where the goal came was him being a little bit more central because he would, you know, it's not, and I don't think this has been something that's occurred under Oscar at all. Like we're never really overly rigid in the front three or front four, even like there's a lot of like interchanging between players, less so now that we have an out and out target forward, but wide players are still able to shift kind of centrally and try to find the game a bit more if need be, if they're given that trust. So it was something that like, honestly, like I do understand what you're talking about now that you mention it, but it wasn't really even something that kind of raised a question mark in my head because I still think it makes a lot of sense to me, like somewhat of Facundo's ability and we see his ability to finish a lot more, which like we can talk for hours about the player that Facundo has. I don't want to say become, obviously, because he's always been this extremely gifted and talented player. But now that he is given a bit more freedom and able to do what he thrives in, which is being a sort of creative player who is allowed to try to get on the ball and influence the game much in the same way that Nani has been previously in the last couple of years. I feel like that's where he's found a lot of success. So I think when I look at that, and especially with Junior, who is a good like ball progressor, I think he's actually improved a little bit in the last year in that. But he's just really good at ball retention, and he's also really, really good at the like late arriving and finding a goal here and there. And he wasn't able to do it in the final, but we've seen him in the league do pretty well, like kind of arriving onto the ball and making those sort of late runs. And I think maybe that was kind of like the plan to have him be a little bit more free and try to impose himself on the game and then find space in the box as well centrally, which, you know, Facundo Torres can do as well, but Junior might not be able to cut in and create as much havoc as Faku might be on the right. So I don't mind it. And I think obviously it played pretty all right. It took him a while to get in the game, but I think I can't really question too many of the tactical decisions that were made here.
Yeah. And I think at the end of the day, the game plan might've been keep it close. Don't let it become 1-0 Sacramento. Cause then that the game's in their hands. We have to chase the game. They control everything. They can hit us on the counter. We have to push bodies forward. So I think the first goal was the most important goal, which it is in most matches nowadays. If you get the first goal, you can kind of control the story of the match. We don't do a good job of that personally, but other teams do. Look at the Philadelphia match. That first goal, it was lucky. We were competitive the whole entire first half, maybe even the better team, some would say. After that, it just fell apart, and that first goal changed everything. I think it would have, for the final two, had Sacramento had scored. I'm not saying they would have gone on to kill us or even win the game, but it would have been just a that much tougher task. And so I think we were a little conservative, and I think that conservatism was shown with Faku on the right and or so in the middle. Now, do you think that had an effect when it comes to the first half, first 60, 70 minutes? Because that is something I wanted to ask you about. We had a very slow start, really most of the game, actually. I shouldn't even say start to the game, just most of the game. Obviously the dominant team, but Sacramento were proving very hard to break down. They were very structured in the back. Do you think the Faku on the right and Urso was part of that, or Urso in the middle was part of that? Or do you think it was something else that was kind of keeping it very, very close?
I mean, I don't know. Like, I will say, like, this is not really a tactical take. So, I mean, take this how you will. But I do remember watching the game, and I also was drinking a lot, so who knows how much that's affecting it. But I remember watching it and just feeling like we weren't asserting ourselves in the way that you would hope against a team of still a fine quality of play, but especially, like, you look at, like, financially how much money we put into the team. Like, we should be outperforming this team, but we were not really able to break ourselves down. And I know what you're talking about with the first goal, because like Malik Foster or whomever, like there were a few times where it really did look like Sacramento were going to get a good look at goal and maybe put one away. And like if they were able to get like a kind of like smash and grab goal, that would put us behind the eight ball for the entire game, because then they're going to even be harder to break down because they can commit more men behind the ball. And I felt that sort of nervousness, I guess, as well. But I don't know. It's honestly like hard for me to pinpoint exactly what was going wrong in that game. I don't necessarily think anything was horribly wrong. I think that maybe we were just kind of playing it out just a little bit, and that could be a bit disappointing. Maybe we would want to see a bit more from ourselves when we're going against an opposition from a lower standard of play. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, Carl was having trouble getting into the game, and he seems to experience that sometimes, but he is a player who, if he is as isolated as maybe he was looking, it's just not going to play to his strengths. Like there were a few times where it was like him and like five defenders in an area, and that's just not his game at all. Like his hold up play is fine, but I don't even necessarily know if his hold up play is that spectacular. If he's forced to take too many touches, that is, it's not something that's going to work for him. And maybe we could have seen Facundo, like if he was played centrally, be there to receive like a layoff pass when the ball was played in Nakara, as opposed to somebody like Junior or so, or Mauricio. But yeah, I mean, I guess what you're saying would make sense. And it's understandable why maybe when we saw the substitution for Benji come in, there was a bit more to play. Yeah, I don't know. It is something that's kind of hard for me to pinpoint. And, you know, I've only really watched the highlights. And in all honesty, not like, I don't know if this sounds dumb, but I also haven't, like, I kind of brushed aside already in my mind the fact that, like, we struggled for the first 70 minutes because we won. We ended up winning. So I haven't looked at this through the most keen tactical eye, if I'm being completely honest. I've just been enjoying it. But, you know, that speaks more to me than as an analyst, I guess, than anyone else.
Well, as you should be enjoying it. I will say I haven't had a chance to fully rewatch the game either, but I have heard, I'm about like 40 minutes in, but I have heard from others that who couldn't go to the game, Pareja had a very astute halftime interview, very quick. I think they asked him like, oh, what's going wrong? And he was very quick, very blunt, something like, I don't know, going to go figure it out or something like that. Yeah. I would have to watch it. But he clearly didn't seem very happy. So that's one thing. But I personally think most of it is down to wanting to make sure we don't give up the first goal and knowing that our moment would come eventually. That's my guess. I don't think it was all to do with us playing super poorly. I think Sacramento, at the end of the day, it's 11v11 on the pitch. Sacramento were definitely contributing bodies back, and we're not the most creative side, guys. Like at the end of the day, you know, we can create and we're able to, but we're no Austin FC. We don't go and just batter down the door. We have to kind of find those moments, and it takes us a while sometimes. We've seen that all season. So it's not a surprise to me that we weren't very creative. I think it was just a matter of our moment will come, and we just have to wait and be patient and make sure that we don't give up the first goal. And our moment did come. So that first goal, I mean, I already kind of got to say my bit on it. N'Golo was immense. Benji was important. But we haven't talked about Facundo Torres scoring that goal yet. He has been stepping up big time in big games for us. You think of that Miami game as well, right? Where we just get scored on, and he turns around and 5-10 minutes later puts the ball in the back of the net. We get to go to penalties and continue this magical cup run. What did you make of that goal and of Facundo Torres stepping up in yet another big game for us?
Yeah, I mean, I think not the best thing about it, but it was good to see such like a unit press going forward, where it wasn't just one player ball chasing, but it was like the team, or at least it was pretty much just Benji and N'Golo, but they didn't really need to commit too many more players to that, because it wasn't like Sacramento had a lot of players in the vicinity, I guess, of where the ball was. And a lot of the options were a bit higher up the field.
We cornered them.
Yeah, yep. We cornered them with two players, essentially. And I actually think this is one thing I do remember saying, that I thought that this game was going to play into Benji a lot more. Because I have, you know, like I remember early in the first half where the ball would be played back to their goalkeeper and he would be expected to kind of ping it out wide. And he never really looked overly comfortable. And I know that he didn't lose the ball here, but he was a part of like the buildup, for lack of a better term, of that they had going in the back that eventually, you know, led to the first ball played out. And then the center back had to shift it on after Benji pressed it and N'Golo won the ball. Like, They were Sacramento, credit to them. They were committed to trying to play out of the back to an extent. And I think Benji did really well to press, and N'Golo did really well to press. And you mentioned it here, but like the deft touch that N'Golo does to give the ball right to Benji, like, was very clever, because we won the ball. And in a counterattacking scenario, or not a counterattacking scenario, but in a pressing scenario like that, where you win the ball in such a high area, I feel like you have to immediately spring, because players are going to start hauling ass to track back, and you have to get them in their most disorganized moment, I guess. And the touch by N'Golo to do that was great. And then the pass by Benji Michel to set up Facundo Torres on his favored left foot with an eye for goal was really humongously crucial as well. Like, he did not panic. He acted in a way that was not, you know, like I said, he was not panicking, but he was acting with urgency, and he made the correct pass, set Facundo up well where he didn't have to take a touch. And Facundo Torres is perhaps, you know, not including obviously Kaká, who won a Ballon d'Or, and Nani, who has won almost everything that there is in professional soccer, but he is the most talented player I think that we have ever had, and he is a player that is going to pop up in moments like these. And it's been the best investment our club, I say, would have ever made. Like, no matter what happens, I think with Facundo now, I think he's definitely been worth it. He's given us our first trophy, and you know, it's been a team effort, and there's been a lot of great players, great performances from every player, but he's become like a star. And not to, you know, he's a person, but he's also a great asset for us now, if you want to look at it from just a business standpoint, because he's, you know, I'm not the first person to say this, obviously, but he is not going to be here for much longer if he continues going how he has in this back end of the season. And he seems to be going, you know, Philadelphia game not included, which he didn't even start. And there's a bit of a cup hangover, a lot of excuses around, but he's going from strength to strength, and he doesn't look to be slowing down. He's getting better as the season progresses. And that can only mean good things for us going forward, whether that means, you know, he continues to do this in a purple shirt, or we see a huge return on our investment. Either way, it's only going to be good for us. So I'm excited and grateful, honestly, for what he has done in his short time here.
Yeah, look, I think he's going to be gone. We're lucky if he survives the end of next season, in my opinion. And that's not just the output. It's not just the goals and the assists. It's the technical consistency. Every time he gets the ball, he has a good first touch. He's able to look up, dribble. He looks comfortable on the ball. He can beat a player or two. And he's got a good pass as well, good weight of ball, good vision. He's just a good player. I mean, he's the best player on this team, full stop. I think we all know that. And I think sometimes his teammates can let him down, unfortunately, and he could be an even better player on a team with a higher quality of player. Not to put down our other players, but I think you all understand what I'm saying. Going to Europe, going to teams who have more money, less restrictions on purchasing other good players, he could really, really thrive. And I think scouts are looking his way, definitely. So that first goal, man. And just the ability to step up, because some players have the talent, but just they can't put it all together in the big moments. And I think he has shown that he has the ability to put it all together in big moments. I mean, even the second goal, the penalty, that's a big moment to go 2-0. Step up, put it in the bottom right corner, power, don't miss the target, send the keeper the wrong way. I mean, just that's a big moment too, not even just the first goal. Obviously, the first goal is the most important, and that's why we're spending so much time on it. But Facundo Torres definitely, he's got that big game player vibe to him. And that's why before the game on this podcast, I said, Facundo's going to have a big game. Facundo's going to step up because he's the first player in a long time I have felt a trust that he's going to step up in a big moment. And there's not a lot of players that I really have that trust with. So I just wanted to give him all the plaudits. Anything to say on the second goal? Just one long ball. Benji chases it down, gets around the keeper, and probably should have scored from there. Instead, gets taken out from behind. But anything to say on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you make a good point that he probably should have been able to put the ball away by himself. But, you know, whatever.
Whatever.
It's something that we've seen. Honestly, there'd be a precedent of success for Benji if we're able to get a ball in behind him. He's able to kind of find a way. I know that, you know, the one that sticks in my head is Columbus, not last season, but the season before, I believe, where he had like three defenders in his general vicinity and he was still able to kind of put the ball away.
That's when we had like all our backups out there and...
Yeah, I can't recall. I think it was like towards the end of the season. Yeah,
we had a red card.
I think that's he's the type of player who like has great physical ability where he's able to kind of body players off the ball and quickness where he can kind of, I don't want to say like he wasn't necessarily out of control in this scenario, but he was like kind of taking big touches and he's able to kind of cover the ground and I don't know. He's just able to kind of use his athleticism, I guess, to kind of cause havoc for back lines, and I think he probably should have put it away. He was a bit lucky that such a rash tackle did come in, but you know, it is what it is. He did well to get into an area where there was some panic being caused, and Facundo, if he's able to step up and be a penalty kick taker, that is crucial for us because it's, you know, God knows it's been such a struggle finding someone in this team.
I looked at the guy sitting next to me. I was like, Mauricio Pereira better not take this penalty.
Yeah, God bless his soul, but
yeah,
he can't bear it, man.
Sorry to cut you off. Anything else to say?
No. I think, yeah, just the same thing that it was a good effort all around. Like another kind of piece that added to this legendary performance that Benji Michel put in to be involved in the second goal as well.
Yeah, and then the third goal is just kind of, I really have nothing to say on it. Do you have anything? It's just a goal.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good finish. It wasn't necessarily hit with the most power, but it was hit across his body, kept it low, and put it into the bottom corner where the keeper couldn't get it. And I mean, it was the icing on the cake, I guess, of what was already becoming a party atmosphere. It was nonetheless sweet.
Yeah, and it was just great hearing the crackling on the replays, on the microphones. I think it was for all three goals, maybe. And all the hands going, oh, just seeing Exploria full was awesome. But yeah, that just, all I can say about the third goal is that just proves to I think everyone involved that Benji is a striker. He's not a winger. run in behind, cut it once, back post finish, perfectly placed, and just couldn't be happier for him. Two questions here for you that I think are interesting. So first, since we're already talking about Benji, I'll start with him. I posed this to Adam, and I posed this online as well on the Twitters. Has Benji done enough to give himself legend status once he leaves? So thinking back on a player's career, unless everything goes crazy, if he were to leave in a season or two, has he already done enough to be considered a legend with his background being a homegrown and this cup final performance?
Yeah, I did see you post this. I honestly forgot that you were the one that posted this, but I saw the question put online. So I have some like preconceived thought about it, I guess. But I would say like definitely. And I think that there has to be some context that would be provided to this, because we're not like Manchester United or anything like that. We're a team who, even including our time in the NASL, was it NASL or USL?
USL.
USL. Yeah. My bad. See, listen, that even speaks poorly to my historical knowledge of the team, unfortunately. But yeah, even if you include the time where in the USL where we did see some success and stuff like that, like the list of club legends, I would say, is relatively small. And I think anyone who comes to the academy is such like a great personality to have on the team, even like not even just like what he does on the field, but him off the field. Like he is like a good person to have at the club. I feel like he is well liked by every single fan. There's not anyone that I know. I mean, people might get frustrated at him, especially when he's played out on the wing and he's kind of, put in a space or put in an area where he's not really fit to succeed, but he is well liked and beloved even by everyone. Like I think right now he's my profile picture on Twitter. And for him to come up in these big moments as he does, you know, like he doesn't necessarily have the most prolific return of any player on Orlando City, but I think that we can point to a lot of huge moments in the game. Like, you know, he made the penalty against New York City in the playoffs, right? Following,
oh, yeah,
like,
that
the
was
whole,
him, wasn't it?
The whole shebang with Rodrigo having to step in goal and whatnot. And, you know, he stepped up in this cup competition, not even just in the final, but I think massively he had some really good performances because he is still looked at for the most part a depth piece. I think that, you know, an academy player who has been here from, who has been really one of the players who's kind of saw this like changing of the guard to be a much more, even though maybe the style is a little more aggressive sometimes, regressive that is, it's been like such a positive change that has occurred. And he is a huge part of that. And he has shown his commitment to Orlando City, not to like kind of dog on Chris Mueller or anything like that, because I can't like begrudge anyone wanting to go to Europe. But, you know, Chris Mueller has maybe kind of presented himself as something where he kind of hoped to leave this part of his career behind. And I don't really get that with Benji Michel. I think that he is committed here and he loves it. And, you know, I don't necessarily foresee this happening, but if an offer ever comes for him to go play abroad, I wouldn't begrudge him of that, but I don't think that that's the one thing that he's focused on. I think he's completely focused on us, and he has respect for the club because, you know, he spent so much time here and had crucial stages of his development, and he has done spectacularly in big moments. And he is so, like, for lack of a better term, like, lovable as a player because of his work rate and because of, you know, who he is as a player and his ability to pop up in these sort of big game moments. Like, we talk about, like, Facundo being a big game player, but like, so is Benji. And I think with all that being considered, he definitely is like, for me, I think if he was going to leave, if he left today, I think maybe he would be at the very least like a cult hero, somebody to be remembered and not a cult hero in the same way someone like Adrian Winter is, but like something mm-hmm. much higher than that.
A deserved cult hero.
Yeah. And he's maybe one of the biggest, one of the biggest legends of the MLS era for sure, especially with this season in mind. So I would say that, probably.
I didn't even remember that he scored the winning penalty. I think that just hammers it home even more for me. I was still on the edge, and I think Adam said maybe, and a lot of people were saying no on Twitter. But I think it's not it's an important thing you said. It's not only the on-field stuff. He's done some big moments, like you said, the penalty in NYCFC first ever playoff win at home, or in general really, and then the this performance overall, getting the assist, getting the penalty, scoring the third goal, you know, even the semifinal, he starts at striker for that game and puts in a really good performance. But off the field, you think of the memes, right? We got the dub. He's got the cowboy hat. Yeah. Now he's got the championship belt, Cleon's championship belt, the backflips, just... There are so many memories already of him and so many things he's involved with. Like, how much more does he have to do to be considered a legend? Like, what does he have to, like, score the game winning goal in the Champions League? Like, first ever he's trophy. Like, he's a big part of that. I think for me, he's absolutely done enough to be given that status. Now, Adam brought up a good point, and you can say what you want to say in a second. Sorry.
No, you're
fine. Adam brought up a good point that he isn't like a top three, top four player on our team. And some people consider, like, you have to be a really, really good player to be considered a legend. And if not, you're basically like a cult hero, but he would be a very deserved one. So I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on that. But you can say what you wanted to say when I cut you off there.
No, you're fine. I mean, I was trying to cut you off, to be honest. But it's the way that he's like you can look at players like Rodrigo and Junior as well as like these sort of players who have like personality around them as well as like ability on the field. And this isn't to like begrudge them. And they're very clearly committed to this team. But like, you know, Facundo is like, he's looking to move on after this, which is completely understandable and probably functionally is a good thing for us because we want to be looked at a place for quality players to come and move on. And Junior Urso is looking at this as like the last chapter, possibly, like, you know, not including maybe like a final move back to Brazil or something in a few years, in like a very long and successful career as well. Where he's been all over the world. And like Rodrigo was trying to break through in Argentina and he came here and he's also fully committed to it. But Benji Michel has been like all Orlando City for his entire career, I would say, which is something that only kind of adds to it. Like he is, and I guess this is kind of similar to something that I've already said on this topic, but like, this is it for him. Like this is what he's passionate about. He's not thinking about the future in any grand way where he's trying to move. He's just all about it. And he, you know, and it sounds dumb to also talk about like all of the memes, I guess you could say, that he's given us. But like, I think for me, that's what makes somebody like such a memorable figure is the impact that they have on not just the team, but like the community and like the culture even of the club as well. And I think that he's already done that, even though he's only, you know, 24 years old or whatever. Like, if we were going to have a media day, I think Benji would be the first person we would want to send. And it's because of his personality and who he is as a person. But yeah.
Yeah. Those are my thoughts on it. I have to agree. Now, different question. And I'm really interested to hear your thoughts and the community at large thoughts. We obviously brought in Alexandre Pato two seasons ago. Free transfer, not a lot of money. But we did know the risk of injury. I think when we first got him, I was pretty down on the transfer. I was like, he's just going to get injured. I don't really get why we're wasting our time with this guy. Let's hope it's not a DP contract. It wasn't. I was fine with it since it wasn't a DP, obviously. But if it was, I would have been really, really vociferously against it. Do you think winning this cup justifies that transfer now? Like, was it as black and white as Pato would only be seen as a successful signing if he helped us win a trophy? Because at the end of the day, he played in every game up until the final, started four of the five of them, I think. didn't necessarily contribute a ton, only one goal on the stat sheet. But if you think about the semifinal, he plays at that 10 position and has, to me, a frustrating game. But if you go back and look at his scouting tape of that game, I'm sure you would be pretty impressed. And he helped us create chances and be dominant in that game, especially in that second half. So had that big performance, only one goal. It was the penalty against Tampa Bay Rowdies. But he was a kind of a mainstay in this cup team. And as a player playing in a cup team, you're helping win the games. Does the cup justify the decision to go out and get and then re-sign Alexandre Pato?
I honestly definitely think that it does. I don't even think if we were to lose this cup final, I would look back on this transfer as this horrific failure. I think that it was a risk versus reward type thing where the risk wasn't too high and the possibility of reward is much higher. And I'm not going to say that like we completely hit the jackpot here. Like obviously, even not just including the injury concerns, it's not like he is the best player in the league when he's playing. He's a very good player. And I think particularly for cups, he adds something a little bit different than just a normal other depth piece because he has experience in extremely high level competition. Like he obviously has Champions League experience. He has a lot of experience with the Brazilian national team. He's played in Brazil a lot as like a high level player, not just as like a depth piece. So I think that I feel like he's had some great performances in the cup. Great might be putting it lightly or might be putting it a bit too strong, but he's done well in the cup. And he is a bit more of like a calming presence, I almost would say, on the field because he has that level of experience. And I'm not necessarily comfortable saying that like we lose X game in the cup competition or we're not in the final without Pato, because I think that there are very foreseeable ways that we make it and the victor as we did now in a parallel universe where we decide not to extend him or not to sign him in the first place. I don't think it all hinged on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it's also quite fair to say that the depth that he provided and, you know, the experience that he provided on the field paid off. And it's not something that I'm looking at, you know, like I said, like he is the reason we're here. But I still think that he did contribute to a decent degree. And
yeah.
I think that more than makes up for the really lackluster in comparison to what I don't think he would have been worth much more than what we're paying him, to be honest. But you could have way foreseen any team in the MLS just looking at him, honestly, and at a level of like name recognition as well, and paying him maybe not even a DP level, but a TAM level salary. And I wouldn't say that that probably would have been worth it to go ahead with. But for as little financial burden he's put on the club and for the performances that we've given, not even really in the league, like he hasn't had too many great league performances. Like I know that he, you know, delivered the corner to Kyle Smith that, you know, got us a last minute winner against Toronto, I believe. And he started the season pretty good, but, you know, he's just not someone who can play a whole lot. But I think that the cup competition and his performances there alone and the relative lack of you know, money we had to spend on him definitely make him more than worth it, in my opinion.
Yeah, the reason I ask is somewhere in the middle of the season, I kind of started getting the vibe that he was around to mainly help with the cup competitions. Like, or the cup competition, since we weren't in League's Cup this season. But like,
yeah,
he wasn't starting a lot of games. He was starting some games. He was in and out. But he wasn't starting a lot of them. He was coming off the bench a lot. A bit of minutes here and there. Rarely going the full 90 a lot of times. And that's obviously, you know, partially down to him being an injury risk all the time. But also, I just thought, I think he's going to play in the cup, basically. And you go to the cup, and he's got a start against Tampa, a start against Philadelphia, a start against Miami. He came on, I think, at halftime against Nashville, or pretty quickly against Nashville. Obviously went to finals. I can't remember if he took a fine, a penalty or not. Probably. And he definitely buried it because we made all our penalties. And then obviously started against New York Red Bulls, had a great game there before getting injured. And so I think it does justify it. And I think that's where the question comes from. It comes from, I think he was kept around to help us push for the Open Cup. Because I think that was a goal for the club this season, that we wanted to win the Open Cup, as it should be every season. But I just feel like with the players that we got, we felt we could really go and do it. And we put our all into it, and we did. So I think it obvious, that's why I go, is it black and white? And for me, I think it is. And I think, obviously, we win, and it justifies the decision to extend Pato. And get the silverware. All right, let's go ahead and finish up with end of the season. We have a run-in of 5 games. We're skipping the Philadelphia game. The club didn't care about it. We don't care about it either. 5-1 loss. Philly got lucky, whatever. Atlanta United at home on Wednesday. Toronto at home on Saturday. And then we have an international break for once. We're not playing in the middle of international break. That's nice. And then we're away to New York City, away to Inter Miami, home to Columbus. Currently sit 5th place, 42 points, 2 games in hand on New York City, who are above us, 4 points above us, and 4th. 1 game in hand over 6th place Cincinnati, who have the same amount of points as us, but 2 less wins, and wins are the tiebreaker, not goal difference. So, what are your predictions for the end of the season? Out of the last 15 points, how many do you think we get? Do you think we make the playoffs? Do you think we get into the home spot? How are you feeling going into the run-in?
I definitely think that there's cause for concern, in all honesty. Not saying that we're, I would say that we're still probably favorites to make the playoffs. And I think that we are definitely going to have an even better idea following the Atlanta game of whether or not we're in like a really good position to do so. And this really is like a tough run of games. Everyone other than Toronto, we're really kind of fighting for places for. So it's going to be a bit of a concern. And we're going to be able to... I saw Evan tweet this earlier, Evan Weston, our color commentator, obviously. This game coming up on the 14th, if we are able to beat Atlanta, we can kind of effectively end this season, the season for them, because they have a game in hand currently on Inter Miami and Columbus, who Columbus is in 7th, Inter Miami's in 9th, and they're all kind of fighting for that 7th place spot right now. And if we're able to take that game in hand away from them, they don't get any points and Columbus wins their game in hand. It's essentially kind of spells the end for Atlanta United season,
yeah,
I guess.
Atlanta are on 30 games. I'm looking at it here. New England are on 30. Miami are on 29 and Columbus are 29. So Atlanta would be playing yet another extra game than them, or just another game in general. Yeah. And they would be leaving with 0 points, and they are currently 5 points out of 7th place. That would be a big jump with only 3 games remaining.
Yeah, and Atlanta aren't in the best form. And, you know, I've been watching them a little bit, and I haven't really been that impressed with Josef Martinez, which I should almost bite my tongue by saying that. But all of these things point to all the reasons why there should be more cause for concern, because there is it's just so hard to predict what is going to occur in the MLS, particularly. Like I hate kind of sounding like this whole like, oh my god, like MLS, you got it. Like, I don't know, but like it is just a very hard league to predict. And I also think because it is such a crucial game in Atlanta's season, they're gonna be up for it. I don't particularly like their coach. I don't think Pineda has been a huge success. And I don't necessarily know if they have a squad that we should be fearful of. They definitely have a lot of talent in it, but I'm kind of honestly expecting a win there, at least a result, but I'm really hoping that we are able to pull through, especially after we had such a bad performance against Philadelphia, which, you know, cup hangover is normal, but it is not good to see such a dire performance, at least in the second half. Like moving on to then like Toronto, I think we're home for that game as well, right? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, we're home for that game as well. I think that these are two really crucial games where we should be trying to take 6 points, because then we have to go to New York and then go to Miami as well. And those are not going to be easy games. I think Miami is a team that we should look at, and we should know we have the quality to beat. And the same thing with New York City. Like, there's no reason that we couldn't win all five of these games, in all honesty. And I definitely don't think we are going to. But, you know, there's winnable matches here, and it's should be acknowledged that they are big for our standing in the season, whether or not we want to push for a home playoff spot, which is not, I don't think should be really much of a concern right now. I think we should just be trying to make it. But to kind of end my ramblings, to make a long story short, I definitely think that we should get some victories here. And I'm actually going to say that I believe we're going to win both of our first two home games. And then I think that maybe from there, I don't know. I think New York, I'm feeling a loss. I think maybe Inter, I'm feeling a draw. And then we have Columbus home. And I think we've played Columbus pretty well the last few times we've played them, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So I'm hopeful for a win there. So I'm thinking minimum 8 points, maximum like 10. I'm a little bit bullish on, or yeah. I don't know, I might not even use that word correctly, but the New York City fixture I'm a little bit concerned about. But other than that, I think that I'm pretty positive on all the other games.
I'll give you some cause for optimism, actually, in the New York City game. We're playing them at Red Bull Arena. We're not playing them at Yankee Stadium.
Damn.
And they last played at Red Bull Arena against DC United and lost 2-1. The last time before that they played at Red Bull Arena was against Charlotte, and they lost 3-1. And then I can't find a time before that where they've played at Red Bull Arena. I guess they played at Red Bull Arena against the Red Bulls and beat them 1-0, but that's a rivalry, so anything can happen there.
Sure.
But, yeah. But so home games at Red Bull Arena are not their cup of tea. So maybe that could be a cause for optimism. Plus, it's straight out of the international break, and that's never helpful for teams trying to come in and have some rhythm. And they're a team that definitely likes to have some rhythm, but also it could be a time for the coach to kind of reset, and just, they've got two games after that to end the season and just go all out. So that's going to be a good game, I think. But I largely agree with kind of your takes on each game. I think there is a chance we win our two home games. We do our best on the road. And then, you know, the final game of the season, hopefully we can get another, I hope a sold out crowd, a nearly sold out crowd, last home game of the season. That's always an event. Hopefully we could get the win there. I'm going to say we come out of this though with, I think we get two wins. I think we're locked in the last five games to get two wins. I don't know where they come. Could be in any of these five games. We get two wins. I don't know the rest though. And I think I'm going to go with two draws and a loss. Yeah. So because we are a team still that likes to tie, you know, we've had a lot of ties this season. We're at, maybe not. We're at six right now. It feels like we've had more.
We're on a bit of a come down as well, because we won, is it six games in a row, including the cup final?
Five
games in a row, including the cup final. It's, not, I'm not making an excuse, but I just think it is kind of like natural to assume that maybe there's going to be a little bit of a dip, unfortunately. But hopefully not. We'll see.
Yep. So I'm saying two wins, two draws, and a loss. Hopefully that loss comes against NYCFC.
Not Miami.
I don't know. Not Miami, not Atlanta. I would take Toronto, yeah. I guess, because they're I would say Toronto, because they're literally nothing to us. And they're right at the bottom of the table. So whatever. We've been gifting points to DC United this season. So have some Toronto. So, Okay, so that's our prediction. So what is that? 6, 7, 8 points. I'm saying 8. You said 8 to 10. So that's definitely enough to get us into the playoffs. Probably enough to get us into a home playoff spot if we were to beat NYCFC. We are 2 games behind them as well. So we would love to see that. All right, Chase, that is where we will end it. Thanks so much for talking with me. Where can our listeners find you at?
Yes, sir. You can find me on Twitter at Vamos OCSC.
Yes, sir. Well, thanks again for hopping on, and have a good rest of your night, champ.
Go City.
Go City, Vamos. Go.
Biggest man in MLS comes up huge!